afternoon, and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Wednesday, to get you through this crisis in a world where few things seem reliable. We are reliable. It's the Jason Rand Show. We're live on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. We got a lot to get to. We only have 3 hours to do it. The chop, as you know it, is done. Kaput. It's gone. We're going to tell you what happened and how much longer before it probably comes back. President Trump has changed his tune on masks. We're going to get into that. Plus, a brand new movie is out this weekend. It's a war drama that every single person needs to see. It's called The Outpost. We'll have a review in just a few moments. This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
CHOP is done. CHOP, as it once existed, is done, is over with. It's gone. Early this morning, around 3 a.m., officers convened. They got their plan in order. They got their ducks in a row. With the help of federal agents, with the help of the Bellevue Police Department, the SPD, at approximately 5 a.m., on their bikes, in their vehicles, went into CHOP. They went into CHOP, and they did something they should have done 3 weeks ago. And it was relatively peaceful. There was little resistance. It turns out when you fortify your borders with old couches, doesn't really keep anybody out. It turns out when you show up really, really early at a site where a whole bunch of people party throughout the night, they're not really ready to defend themselves early in the morning. Late last night, the mayor issued a 48-hour public safety emergency that gave the cops the ability to completely clean up the area formerly known as CHOP. Not just the blocks, the 6-block radius that they took over, not just the space in front of the East Precinct, but also Cal Anderson Park. They were there, they were enforcing the order, there was over 30 arrests. Although most of them, it would appear, will not be charged. Of course not. But the reason why they moved is not the violence that we've seen. The reason why Mayor Jenny Durkan cleared CHOP has nothing to do with the two murders we saw, with the vandalism we've seen, with the attempted rape, with the attempted arson, with the daily fights, with the open-air drug dealing. No, she moved after protesters went to her home, when they took the block party to her home. You see, at CHOP, it's been a block party, a summer of love. But when you take it to her home, the mayor feels threatened. The mayor speaks out. The mayor takes action. And so that's what happened today. Police, city workers, from SDOT over to the Human Services Department, they went in, they cleaned up. And some of what they found was both amusing and terrifying. On the one hand, you saw an individual who was arrested, a 29-year-old supposedly carrying a pipe for a weapon, a metal pipe, along with a kitchen knife. But you also saw some homemade devices that presumably CHOP security put up to keep people out. They had a homemade spike strip, which apparently was just a piece of plywood with nails hammered through.
That'd work.
Except the way that it is, there's no real angle to the nails, and it feels like they're just sort of tenuously tapped through.
Yeah.
They're not particularly big nails, according to this photo I've got at Twitter.
Here, take the work car and go test out their homemade spike strip.
Have you seen the photo?
I have.
Does that look like it can take out even a bicycle?
No.
But that's the top-notch security over at CHOP. If you want to see the photos, by the way, head on over to twitter.com/JasonRants. twitter.com/JasonRants. Now, of course, because they did this, they still have to capitulate some to the activist crowd. Mayor Jenny Durkan, moments ago, during a press briefing, made the case that they're going to reimagine policing in this city, whatever that means. It's just words. Because you'll recall, before the George Floyd murder, which, as we'll remind everyone, did not happen here. It happened in Minneapolis. Before that, the city was all in on getting rid of the federal consent decree. The city mentioned time and time and time again that we are the best trained police department in the entire country. We are the gold standard. We are ready to get rid of this federal consent decree. But then George Floyd happened. And then the city decided to pretend that this police force in Seattle is no longer the best of the best. As a result of that, cops are leaving. As a result of being kicked out of the East Precinct over politics, cops are leaving. Cops today feel good about taking it back, but the damage has already been done. But we're going to reimagine policing. Here's the chief of police, Carmen Best.
I will continue to work with our Community Police Commission, our Office of Police Accountability, and our Office of Inspector General, and all of our community partners and city leaders to encourage peace and move forward with how to re-envision public safety in our city.
Got it. So in other words, 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 words. No plan, which is what we've come to expect here. Now, the folks who live and work in the region, they are obviously happy that this finally happened. An employee over at Richmark Label, the owner of which who was on the show talking about the lawsuit that they filed alongside other businesses, they said it's better late than never, I guess.
It's never too late. It's a lot later than it should have been. It should never have gotten to be like this.
I certainly agree with his last point. It should never have gotten to this, but doesn't that mean that it is too late, that it can be too late? It should never have gotten to this point. Literally means it was, in fact, too late. Because what he's talking about is not just how out of control and chaotic it's been. He's obviously not just talking about the graffiti. He's talking about the death, the homicide. So we chose to skip out on the press briefing with Carmen Best and Mayor Jenny Durkan. But some questions are being asked right now of the press, so we thought we would jump in live just to get a sneak peek at how they're spinning all of this.
I think I deeply, deeply regret the loss of life. And as I said, I want to meet with the families to express my condolences. We'll have lots of opportunity to do after actions on what people could have done at what junctures. As you saw this morning, an operation of this scope and magnitude takes very careful planning across many departments.
No,
and
at not really.
With the number of people who had been in that area previously, we would not have been able to do this operation.
Last
if you have thousands of people in there, it's a very different operation than if you have 100 or fewer.
There weren't thousands of people camped there.
Customers within the CHOP area have been quite frustrated at how long it has taken to what we saw this morning. I'm wondering if you can address that and maybe talk about some of the financial support that might be available to them, especially knowing that they've obviously seen a great impact because of the COVID-19 crisis leading up to the CHOP zone creation.
Yeah, that's a great question. The question was a lot of the businesses in the area had already been suffering impacts because of the COVID-19 closures, and this created more impacts upon them. What kind of financial resources would be available? Very important. I've met with business and residents, and we're going to do a number of things. One, I've talked to my Office of Economic Development to see what resources we can provide to businesses as quickly as we can to support them. In addition, I've been talking to the city attorney's office to see if we can do expedited payment of any smaller tort claims so that if people have lost revenues, they're damaged to property and the like, that we can pay those on a very quick and expedited basis with as little paperwork as possible. Obviously, some of the larger claims that have been filed in court may take longer for the lawyers, but I want those businesses to get what they need to reopen and stay open. I heard very clearly from them the pain of seeing their businesses closed, the graffiti on the walls, calling back their employees, but not yet able to open. Preview of coming attractions, we're seeing the numbers of COVID cases go up significantly in Seattle and King County. And so we know that having businesses operate safely is critical to them and their workers, so I'm going to do everything I can to mitigate the impacts for those businesses.
Thank you, Mayor. Our first question today will come from Sydney Brownstone, Seattle Times, followed by Justin Carter,
Capitol
Hill,
Seattle.
Sydney, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Anthony. Yes, my question is for Mayor Durkin. Do you bear any responsibility for the deaths of the two teenagers at the CHOP over the last 2 weeks?
Yes.
I think that is deeply regretful what happened to the two people who were killed as well as the two people in the hospital. I want to make sure that I can meet with those parents, express my condolences, and also say that I think that there's many ways in which the city of Seattle could be better. We don't know yet enough about those shootings to determine exactly who did it, but it should never happen in the city of Seattle.
Thank you, Mayor. Our next question will be from Justin Carter, Capitol Hill, Seattle. Justin, the floor is yours.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much. And this is for the mayor. So this morning, we again saw many officers with their badge numbers covered. Is it time for you to send a stronger message about what the community expects and demands from its police force?
I don't know about that. I'm going to let Chief Best answer that question because I'm not aware of what was happening in the field. But we've made very clear what the rule is for Seattle Police Department, and she'll address that.
Yes, sir.
Is that Justin that was asking the question? Hi, Justin. We will make sure we follow up on that. Badge numbers, as you know, have been legislated and should not be covered at any time by the morning band. So if that occurred, we will make sure that we follow up on it. We have plenty of video, lots of body-worn camera that was out there, and many, many media. And so we will make sure that we follow up on that, but the rules have not changed. So thank you for inquiring, and I'll make sure that I follow up.
Listening to live coverage of the press briefing after a morning that dismantled CHOP.
And thank you, Mayor. Our next question will come from Lily Fowler, Crosscut, followed by Hannah Scott, Cairo Radio.
Lily, but then a good question because of him. Anna previously, Lily previously accusing me of anti-Semitism or Islamophobia.
Question is for Mayor Durkin. Just wondering what she makes of the statement that was released today by Attorney General William Barr praising the action that took place this morning.
So now they're going to try to distance themselves from the Trump administration and then go again on the attack.
Order.
So thank you for the question, Lily. I think I've made it clear from the outset that I don't think that the president or his administration's comments have been helpful. In fact, there's no question that they have made the situation more volatile, including some threats on Facebook that some patriots would come this 4th of July to liberate the area. I think that's made it more difficult. I would urge the Attorney General to restore lawfulness to Pennsylvania Avenue.
Oh, burn! Oh, wow. Wow, look at you, Mayor Durkin.
Scott, Cairo Radio.
Told you it was a dumb question and a dumb response.
Q13 News. Hannah?
This is Hannah from our sister station, so it'll be a great question.
Hannah, the floor is yours.
When she decides to unmute her phone.
Hi, thank you both. This is for both Mayor Durkin and Chief Best, either who would like to weigh in. This morning, as the CHOP area was being cleared out, I heard many of the protesters who did eventually leave peacefully promising that they would be back. What, if anything, is being done to ensure that they don't return and try to set up again, either at the park or in up on Pine near the East Precinct, as well as anywhere else in the city?
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for that question. First, let me just start by saying that we respect everyone's right for First Amendment free speech. So if they want to come back, if anybody wants to protest and do so peacefully and exercise their right, we certainly encourage that. What we can't have is what we saw there, an area that where people were entrenched, where crimes and lawlessness were occurring, where people were being assaulted, raped, robbery, and, as you know, two murders. So there's no situation or circumstance that I can see where, as a police chief, I would condone that kind of behavior going on in any part of the city at any time, which is one of the reasons that when we were able to get a good plan in place, we operated on it. So, again, we support people's First Amendment free speech rights, but we certainly can't condone or promote lawlessness in any area of the city.
Thank you, Chief. Our next question will be from Simone Del Rosario, Q13 News, followed by David Douglas, NBC News. Simone, the floor is yours.
I'd like to follow up on what Hannah was talking about there for the mayor or for the chief.
There's conversation on the ground about moving the occupation elsewhere. What will the city's response be if these protesters decide to occupy elsewhere? Will you allow them to set up camp like they did outside the East Precinct, as long as there's not that lawlessness that the chief just mentioned?
Let's see if they'll deflect on a valid question.
So, again, I want to echo what the chief said, is we strongly support the First Amendment rights to protest, and we have seen that in Seattle over the last 3 weeks, where tens of thousands of people have taken to the streets, sometimes in one march, and we will be guided by each situation as it presents itself. We will support the right of free speech, but we will not support the right of people who are creating a situation like we had on Capitol Hill that ended up in violence and disorder in the way that it did.
Thank you, Mayor. Our next question will be from David Douglas, NBC News, followed by Kara Kostanich, Como 4. David, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I would like to just echo my colleague's question from previous Mayor and ask what you would do if there is another attempted occupation in the city.
Good
and
for
also
them. Pushing for an actual answer.
The K-Rail traffic barrier that's gone up to line the corner of the defined East Precinct here on Capitol Hill. Are you preparing, Chief Best, to have to defend the precinct for some time to come when protesters inevitably return?
So I think those are three questions, but let's see. I'll let Chief Best ask the one. But look, every protest situation, an act of civil disobedience, we respond to as the circumstances allow and permit. And so it's hard to predict with every hypothetical. We've had all sorts of protests in Seattle,
anymore.
Just not over the last 3 weeks, but over many years. And so we will be guided by what the situation on the ground is. And Chief Bess and her troops have been trained strongly in how to respond. And if it affects other city departments, we will look at that time. We've had protests, for example, almost every evening at the West Precinct, which, other than some property damage cases, have gone on and it has not required operations like we saw today. So we will be guided by what the circumstances are. What was the next question? We don't anticipate at this point. We think that with the streets open, we're hopeful that Seattle, Capitol Hill, can return to normal.
Okay.
The businesses
so there you go. That
open,
is Mayor Jenny Durkin. We don't have to carry any more of this. She's not answering questions directly. And by the way, it takes a lot when you only get basically one question to ask three reporters in a row, starting with Hannah Scott from our sister station, Cairo Radio, then Simone Del Rosario from Q13, and then a reporter there from NBC, all asking the exact same question. They're trying to get an answer from her, and there's a reason why she doesn't want to go on the record, because it takes political courage to actually tell protesters in Seattle that they don't get to run roughshod over this entire city. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Wednesday before a long holiday. We are taking, of course, tomorrow and Friday off for the 4th of July, which means we get to talk movies on a Wednesday instead of a Friday. The big weekend release is a fully immersive war drama called The Outpost. It stars Scott Eastwood, Orlando Bloom, and Caleb Landry Jones. The movie tells the story of the 53 U.S. soldiers defending the most deadly combat outpost during Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. The film follows the soldiers at the outpost as they deal with the constant threat coming from the Taliban. It is a slow burn movie of sorts where you see soldiers just getting through the day and you know something could happen at any moment, and it almost always does.
Okay, good to go!
No? Captain Yeskis, this bridge is for sir.
Embrace the suck, younger.
Yes. Yes, sir.
I got a question. Your old man in the military?
Yes, sir. West Point, class of 84.
Really?
Yeah.
You know a guy named Nick Coddington?
Yeah, I think he did, actually. So, you like football, sir?
I do like football, yeah.
Are you a Nebraska fan, right?
Yeah.
I think they're going to...
Nothing happens until it does happen, and of course there are deadly consequences. And by the time the U.S. was ready to close down the base, realizing that it is essentially indefensible, it was too late. The Taliban decided to take it, catching everyone off guard.
You think you guys can make it back to the barracks?
I don't know if you can lay down enough
fire, but go for it. Over.
All right. Be ready.
Gregory, you ready?
Good to go.
Good.
For almost the entire second half of the movie, it focuses on the courageous efforts to save each other and defend that base, and The Outpost very easily qualifies as one of the best films of the year. Director Rod Lurie takes you in that battle. It's one of the most immersive experiences I've ever had with a movie, and it's not just for part of the film, it's the entire movie. You're in close-ups with the characters. You got the shaky camera at times. You feel the urgency and the desperation as the American troops stand up for one another. And while every single character, I think, in this movie owns the role, a shout-out goes to the outstanding Caleb Landry Jones. He's owed an Oscar nomination for this scene alone.
Well, it didn't save him.
He was your friend.
No. No, he was not. I'm scared.
I know. It's scary, but I promise it will help to talk about it.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Dad, can you breathe for me?
I'm breathing.
I think the movie works best because the director doesn't try to create unnecessary drama, especially during the first half of the movie. He kind of just lets the actors do their thing, and it comes off so incredibly genuine. The only downside is this movie deserves to be seen on a big screen, but unfortunately you're not going to get a movie theater screen as the theaters are still closed down. But still, I watched it on my laptop, and it drew me in the entire time. This is a tense and gripping movie, and it very easily earns that R rating, more from language than any depiction of war injuries. It is a film that does the heroes that lost their lives that day and the heroes that defended each other. It does them well. As we go into this holiday weekend, I cannot think of a better movie to see than The Outpost. It's out on demand on Saturday. I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. When we come back, more coverage of what's going on at CHOP. Still going on. We're going to get into it when we return. Welcome back to The Jason Rantz Show live. On this Wednesday afternoon, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm glad you stuck with us through all of this CHOP nonsense. We broke away from the press briefing because I get annoyed when politicians choose not to answer questions that are pretty direct. And when you have media members asking literally the same question three times in a row, it's rather telling. Mayor Jenny Durkan has no idea what she's doing, and there is a dangerous amount of revisionist history. There was a dangerous amount of lying, flat-out lying, and I think it was bad faith lying throughout this entire process of covering CHOP. How many media outlets out there, mostly national, almost entirely national, not all of them, mostly national, how many of them decided to pretend that CHOP was totally peaceful? It was a street fair, said Dan Simon, or Dan Diamond, or Steve Diamond, whatever his name is over at CNN. It's like a street fair. Daily Beast, with a reporter who I don't think even came to CHOP, said businesses loved the CHOP. You have a organization on Twitter called the Sunrise Movement. They are a far leftist progressive group. They tweeted just a few hours ago, CHOP was a peacefully held zone in Seattle. Now police in full riot gear are coming in to destroy the community the protesters built and create violence. The police are not here to protect us. They're here to silence us. Hashtag defund the police. There is literally nothing true in that tweet beyond a place called CHOP, a city called Seattle, and we do have a police department. But the substance of this tweet, completely false. Why are we allowing so many organizations and politicians and media outlets to lie about what CHOP was? Even during today's press briefing, the mayor opened it up by suggesting for several weeks it was totally peaceful. And then, of course, we had some of the crazies come out. She didn't say crazies. For weeks, it was fine. Tell that to Cartender, a business that was a block away from CHOP. A business that not only was vandalized, but had someone break in and try to set on fire. Tell that to the people who live in that region of this breakaway nation as they try to go about their lives unable to get in and out of their homes safely because of all the gunfire. I was there. I saw the fights. And it is certainly true that when it started on day one, the second you step forward, you're not going to get stabbed. But to pretend that this whole thing, this whole time, was totally peaceful, that is a lie. That is a lie. And they are not serving their cause by lying. But what they are doing is creating more division. A lot more division. Because what they're saying is this was appropriate, and the police came in, those evil police officers, and they broke it up. Let's defund them. They're not here to protect us. They're here to silence us. They're here to hurt us and create violence. Well, what do you think is going to happen the next time one of these activists who actually believes this nonsense, this drivel, the next time they have any interaction with a cop? It's going to get tense unnecessarily. And the more tense it gets, the higher likelihood that there is going to be some kind of aggression coming from one side or the other. All this does is create division, and I think that's their goal. That, I believe, is the goal of the Sunrise Movement when they send out a stupid tweet like that that lacks any facts. When politicians like Shama Sawant come out there and say the real reason why someone died the other day, that 16-year-old kid, it wasn't even gun violence. It was capitalism. She actually said capitalism is what killed that kid. Then you have ridiculous people, like a guy named Robert Cruikshank. He's the campaign director of a group called Demand Progress. They don't demand progress. They demand that you give in to their ridiculous demands. Now, he's calling out Jenny Durkin, the mayor of Seattle, for her letter demanding an investigation into Shama Sawant. Shama Sawant led a protest, a march, to the mayor's home. And only afterwards did the mayor actually move to dismiss and dismantle CHOP. I don't think that particular letter was a smart political move, because it's not like anything's going to happen to Shama Sawant. But can we just go over one point of this dude's tweet and tell me how absolutely ridiculous it is? Because again, I acknowledge that Jenny Durkin should not have written that letter demanding an investigation against Shama Sawant. Just so, let the record say that, producer Pate, let the record show, I believe that that was a dumb political move.
The record is now showing okay. That.
This is what Robert Cruikshank from Demand Progress tweeted. Durkin retaliates by attacking a woman of color, Shama Sawant. They are pretending now on the far fringes of the left that Mayor Jenny Durkin is only criticizing Shama Sawant for being a woman of color. That's the implication, that it's driven by racism. Now, of course, you can see the logical problems there, because then can't I just say Robert Cruikshank is going after Mayor Jenny Durkin because she's a lesbian or a woman? hey, white dude, cisgendered white dude, why are you attacking a lesbian, a female? Of course, it's ridiculous, but this is all driven to do what? Say it's driven to divide us. It's
driven to divide us, Jason.
I'm so glad you made that point on your own, because it tells me I'm getting through to people.
You really are, especially those who listen to you 3 hours a day, Monday through Friday.
And if they don't, they follow up on the podcast. This is all meant to divide. And when they divide, these people go after power. Because in division, people are looking for a leader, right? When things are chaotic, people look for someone to bring some sense of normalcy back to this world. And what's happening in Seattle is a little bit different than what's happening nationally, especially when it comes to the media doing the division. You go on CNN or MSNBC, you see a lot of people who are cheering the division on, cheering the statues coming down, saying the rioting, well, you know, we prefer not to riot, but you know what? They have a point, don't they? I mean, so what? You're looting a big business. They've got insurance. They'll figure it out. What's important is to talk about the pain these people are suffering. No one was suffering pain when they decided to break into a whole bunch of businesses, whether it's in Seattle, Atlanta, Minneapolis, or New York. Those were opportunistic criminals. And in all of that, there was one person in the media who was constantly bringing reason and rationale and intellect to the national conversations. And as a result of that, this media member just saw the highest ratings in cable news history, delivering an average total audience of 4.331 million viewers a night. That media member is me.
Did you say you?
Jason Rance.
The Jason Rance, the one that I am currently having a conversation with right now.
On the Tucker Carlson Show.
That's you? You're the same one that I see on the TV?
Yep. Tucker Carlson tonight. At a time when I've been on that show 18 times in this month alone, didn't just see his highest ratings, but the highest ratings in the history of cable news. You know who didn't have the highest ratings?
CNN.
Who was not on CNN last month, I guess?
You were not on CNN last month.
But was I on Fox News?
You were on Fox News.
Was I on Tucker Carlson?
You went on Tucker Carlson.
And what did I just say about Tucker Carlson's ratings?
Massive ratings.
Huge. Because of me. I mean, he did some work, obviously, too. But because of me. No, obviously, Tucker did all the work. He broke the record. And he broke the record because he was speaking to the people who are seeing what's going on in this country, all the division, and he was actually trying to bring people together. You watch any of his monologues that have been absolutely brilliant this month, and I mean that legitimately. This is not me sucking up because I'm on the show all the time, which, by the way, I'll be on later today. That has nothing to do with it. I've contacted you. I've texted you, Peyton, to say you need to watch this.
You have.
What he is trying to do and what he's been doing and why he is succeeding right now is he is calling out the chaos, the destruction, the division. He's saying, this is wrong. This is not the right direction for this country. And as a result of calling out all the bad faith activists out there, he faced an advertiser boycott. The lunatics on Twitter, the cancel culture critics on Twitter, who don't even watch Fox News, don't even watch Tucker Carlson. They demanded businesses pull their advertising. Some of them did, including T-Mobile. And despite that, he persisted. He went on. He continued to push the same kind of common sense responses that if you were to watch and you didn't know anything about Tucker Carlson, who very clearly leans right, but if you didn't know that going in, you would have had no clue where he stands ideologically because he's calling it all out. Both sides, when they're acting inconsistently, both sides, when they're not speaking with reason and speaking with the intent of uniting us. People are listening to him. And people are rewarding him with their patronage, with their viewing. And I look at something like this, and for the first time in about a month, I feel a little bit better about the direction of this country. Because if someone like Tucker Carlson, who's pushing just a very rational, reasonable message at a time of all this chaos, at a time where people are purposefully trying to divide us, that means people are out there and they're looking at this chaos and they're thinking the way you and I think. But more importantly, I was on and I'm a part of history now.
Nobody's going to remember that.
Everyone, it's on my IMDb profile. I'm putting it on my Tinder.
Jason Rance is a pretty common name, so I think people might not think that it's you. You need to really, you know, carry around like a screenshot of that, because I don't want people to confuse your fame.
I literally have it in my wallet, a printout of a Forbes article about it.
Okay, that's good.
And my IMDb profile is my background now on my phone.
As it should be.
Clearly. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text, I will happily read it. I may not respond, though. And if I do respond, it might be snarky response. Snarky Jason. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we're going to dive into some different language coming from the president on the use of masks. But will it change your mind? We're going to get into that and so much more on the Jason Rance Show. Live on this Wednesday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is the last live show this week because we are off tomorrow and Friday. On Friday, we've got a special edition of the show in that it's not the show at all. It is a moderated debate by me between the top five gubernatorial candidates. And we'll do it with limited interruptions. It originally aired on TVW. It is put on by the Evergreen Women's Republican Group, a federation, amazing group. I'm a big fan of theirs. So I hope you tune in at 3 o'clock. Again, limited commercial interruptions for the GOP gubernatorial debate. And if you miss it, we're going to podcast it as well. So you'll be able to hear it that way. We're in the middle of a spike of coronavirus cases, which makes complete sense when you look at the context. More testing means more cases of the coronavirus. The coronavirus is very contagious. We are getting a lot more information as to how it doesn't really affect children, for the most part. We obviously know that unless you are between the ages of 60 and 80 or 80 and death, it is very significant for you. That's what the data says. More so for 80 plus, but also 60 to 80. If you're someone who has an immune compromised system, also a problem. But for the vast majority of people, if you get the coronavirus, it might be awful. It might be nothing at all, but you will likely survive. The overwhelming likelihood is that you survive. But there is a debate about whether or not you should be wearing masks. Now, not everyone thinks that you should mandate a mask, but the language coming from the president right now, coming from this administration is, yeah, we don't support the mandate because we think you're smart enough to wear a mask on your own, but you should be wearing a mask.
Well, I don't know if you need mandatory because you have many places in the country where people stay very long distance. You talk about social distancing, but I'm all for masks. I think masks are good. I would wear, if I were in a group of people and I was close.
You would wear one.
Oh, I would. Oh, I have. I mean, people have seen me wearing one. If I'm in a group of people where we're not, you know, 10 feet away, but usually I'm not in that position, and everyone's tested. Because I'm the president, they get tested before they see me. But if I were in a tight situation with people, I would absolutely.
So, is it fair? Because I've certainly heard from a lot of folks who are upset with me taking a position that you should be wearing a mask, or at least taking a position that it's not tyranny for the governor of this state or any state to mandate a mask. Is it a fair position, in your view, for the folks who don't like the mandates to say, doesn't have to be mandated, I'm smart enough to know what to do on my own, and I will wear the mask? Or are we back to pretending that the mask does absolutely nothing? Because the idea that a mask does absolutely nothing, literally nothing, That defies logic. How does the coronavirus spread? Through what?
Through droplets,
droplets
in the air.
Which is just gross to think about.
The term droplets?
Yeah, it's just gross. It's like the word moist. No one likes it. Droplets. Now, when you don't have something covering your face, do droplets go lots of places?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you have something in front of your face, do a lot of the droplets get stuck between whatever's in front of your face and the rest of the world?
Yeah, it almost acts like a shield
almost.
Of some sort.
It's not perfect, right? It's not perfect.
No, nothing's perfect.
Nothing's perfect. You wear a seatbelt in your car, you could still die if you were to get into an accident, but it makes it much safer if you were to get into an accident. And it's the same thing with wearing a mask. Wearing a mask cuts down the likelihood of you spreading that droplet filled with coronavirus. That's how it works. That is logical to me. I've certainly not taken a position that you have to wear a mask absolutely everywhere. I'm not wearing a mask right now.
You're not?
Does it look like I'm wearing a mask? What, did I get one that looks like my lips? My lips are literally moving. It's an animated mask?
Some people might have those.
Well, I don't. You're not wearing a mask? When I go outside and there's no one around, I'm not wearing a mask. If I have to get into a business that, like a grocery store that has a lot of people, I'm going to wear a mask because I don't want to get it. I know that if I get it, it's not going to kill me, but I don't want to get the flu. I don't want to get a cold. I don't want to get any of that stuff. So anything that I can do to cut down the risk, I will do. I get that you don't like a mandate. Okay, so let's pretend the mandate doesn't exist, because when you're not actually enforcing a mandate, the mandate doesn't exist. So just pretend it doesn't exist. What is the argument against wearing a mask? Because I've heard some crazy reasons why people refuse. Like, here's one, and I don't know if the 702 is being facetious. How do you keep a mask in your pocket? By putting it in your pocket. That's how. If you don't want to put it in your pocket, hang it around your neck. It's not that hard.
I literally put a mask in my pocket every single
day. That's what I do. I've got one right here.
There it is. Mine's right over here.
And to prove that I have it, I'm now wearing it. That's why it's sent. This is not an animated thing. This is a real mask.
Dumb. Oh, I like that. That looks nice.
Can we just be rational about this stuff? Just because a mandate came from this governor doesn't mean it is wrong. Doesn't mean it's wrong. Or doesn't mean it's not based in science. It is. It is based in science. But Jason, earlier on, they said not to wear a mask. Yes, because they were trying to save the masks for the people who needed it the most. And at a time where you've got stay-at-home orders, where the economy is basically shut down, and you have a run on masks, you want to give those masks to the hospital workers because they are having a higher likelihood of being in front of someone who's got the coronavirus. What is the economic argument that you can make right now to justify doing something like ignoring this mandate that could lead to the economy being shut down again? What do you say to justify a personal position that is going to hurt a small business in Leavenworth? Or the family hoping to get back to work in Gold Bar or Tukwila? What is the argument against helping to open up outdoor recreation and travel so people can comfortably book a room at a lodge in Skykomish? What is the argument? What is the justification that you can make? Are you okay hurting small businesses because you don't like a mandate coming from the governor that isn't really even a mandate? Is your life truly less free because you put on a mask walking into a grocery store in Shoreline? I would argue it is not. But I would like to hear from you. You can send me a text at 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we're going to talk with a business that was directly impacted by CHOP. CHOP is no more, but how's the business? We'll get into it.